Babe Russell, and it's tape number 438, April 25th, 1980, and it's side two of the tape. Did you read last week in the newspaper that David Berkowitz, known as the Son of Sam, is asking for veteran benefits? He says that his mental injury happened at the time he was in the service. He has military records as a rifleman and skill as a clerk, and he worked for the police department when he came home. And if any good investigation were done into David Berkowitz, they'd find that he was a subject of mind control while he was in Korea, stationed in Korea. He was many veterans of Korea, Mr. Romero from SLA fame, and the civil rights movement, Dennis Sweeney, who killed Alan Lowenstein. These people, political activists that turned into murderers, were victims of mental hospital zombie control, which was the government's vengeance for letting them take an anti-establishment view of history. There is one matter I just want to take care of, a small article in the paper out here that you wouldn't see. There's a group that tried to have a rock concert in Monterey to duplicate the Monterey Pop to get into the spirit that existed in 1967 out here, and it didn't quite get off the ground, but at the concert people were handing out acid, and it was free, whoever wanted it. And of course I'm very leery of this kind of generosity. And at the time of the concert, while it was going on or shortly afterwards, a young woman fell over a bridge right near the concert grounds, just a block away at the border of the Monterey Fairgrounds, is right next to this bridge. And this woman fell over the bridge, and they said it was suicide. And then a gentleman was charged with her murder, a man by the name of Michael Lively. And he was charged with holding Victoria Allgood, she's 21 years old, with her feet dangling over the bridge by the ankles and then dropping her. And this was brought to the court here in Monterey, and the Superior Court dismissed it. This last December, they dismissed the entire case, and then they took it to a higher court where they announced this week that it will stay indefinitely, that the man who was charged with this murder won't be tried, evidently, and either dismissed or not tried at all. And the whole purpose was to associate violence, again, with the movement, with the young people, with music, and I'm sure that was it. And as with all provocateurs of this type, they get off and the charges are dropped and they're in limbo, and he won't be charged with the murder, even though the description of how she died, being held by her ankles and dropped 30 feet, is very clear, and there evidently had to be witnesses to know the details, but he won't be charged with that murder. I'm very proud of my research on the John Kennedy assassination. I spent 8 years cross-filing the Warren Commission hearings, exhibits, and documents, the 26 volumes, and consider myself to know as much about the murder of John Kennedy as anybody in the United States. And I've done a lot of hard work on that investigation. And one of the things that I have stressed over the years is the fact that the decision to kill John Kennedy began long before the intent to withdraw the troops from Southeast Asia in 1964, or pulling back from the Bay of Pigs, not killing Fidel Castro, and having the invasion called off. That was one of the incidences that further triggered the assassin's plan to kill John Kennedy. But I've maintained, on the basis of 16 years research, going into the 17th year, that the decision to kill Kennedy began in 1960, as soon as he was to be nominated for President of the United States, that the people in power, the organized crime, the business concerns, did not want John Kennedy as president, and that as soon as he got the nomination, that's when the assassination teams were set up. When Robert Mayhew, representing the Howard Hughes Organization, the CIA, the FBI, met at the Plaza Hotel in April of 1960, with members of organized crime to set up assassination teams. This was the muscle for what was to become a long series of deaths: John Kennedy, Robert Kennedy, Martin Luther King, Malcolm X, Medgar Evers, and the hundreds of witnesses that would be involved in this case. Last week I talked about, no, it was 2 weeks ago, Irv Davidson, the very important man mentioned in the Bry Lab and the Abscam investigations as being sort of the head of the octopus the man who had the connecting link to the various elements of the assassination, the links of John Kennedy, just sticking to that one assassination or the assassination teams. He had the connections to Jimmy Hoffa and Jack Ruby and Sam Giancana, the Chicago Dallas organized crime group. He had the connections to New Orleans, to Carlos Marcellus and Traficanta. He had the Washington connections to the news media, Jack Anderson and Drew Pearson earlier. He had the international connections, the national connections, to pull off this murder. He was close to Murchison and whose home J. Edgar Hoover and Richard Nixon were the night before John Kennedy was killed. This was a meeting place before the assassination. Irv Davidson seems to be a connecting link to all of that. And in the book, The Hoffa Wars, that I've quoted on several other tapes, tape 431, and going back to the assassination of John Kennedy and the assassination teams and certain trials taking place in New Jersey and the Abscam story breaking. In the book, The Hoffa Wars, there is a section on Davidson, and I gave you some pages, tape 436 on the printed sheet from the index, about Irv Davidson, where his name was mentioned. But I want to go specifically on this tape into what this author is saying, Dan Moldau, M-O-L-D-E-A, about Irv Davidson that is on those pages that I didn't have time for on the tape, and show you how important he is to Permandex, to the Torbett document that many of you researchers have, which is a 200-page, 200-to-300-page document on the framework of the assassination of John Kennedy, incorporating the Bahama connections and John Connolly and the Solidaris, the white Russian Nazi connections, and those of the Werbel, the Chilean connections, the weapons, the assassination teams. This book, The Hoffa War, tells about Davidson's connections not only to Jimmy Hoffa, but the motive that Jimmy Hoffa had and organized crime had for killing John Kennedy with the assistance of the Texas officials. On page 108 of this book, it tells that Davidson was active among the Democrats, as well as the Republicans, at the 1960 Democratic Convention in Los Angeles. Davidson had a meeting between Hoffa and Lyndon Johnson and his old friend John Connolly. Connolly's name comes through the assassination loud and clear, and it's Connolly who has the property down at Tyrol Bay in Jamaica, where the top Nazis and industrialists go for their vacations and their espionage activities. This book says that Hoffa promised to support Lyndon Johnson, and he would support anybody except Kennedy. The organized crime people hated Robert Kennedy when he was in the Senate with the McClellan Committee investigating organized crime. Now, just one reference of Irv Davidson in the book The Hoffa War tells about Irv Davidson's introducing these various people like Hoffa and having meetings between Hoffa and Lyndon Johnson and John Connolly, that's the Texas connection, and that they would support Lyndon Johnson after the Adlai Stevenson failed, and when Kennedy got the nomination, that's when these people got together and met. This book confirms what I have known for a long time in the chain of network that happened in 1960 when John Kennedy got the nomination. This author, Moldau, says that the same month before the first of the Kennedy-Nixon debates that began September the 26th, Jimmy Hoffa made a trip to New Orleans to meet Carlos Marcello, another close associate of Irv Davidson, and allegedly Marcello had a suitcase filled with $500,000 to go to Richard Nixon, a $500,000 contribution, and the other $500,000 was going to come from the mob in New Jersey and Florida. You see how the Bri Lab and the Abscam and Irv Davidson melt together, and Hoffa supported Richard Nixon. It was a question of anybody but the Kennedys, and Attorney General William Rogers, who was linked to the Bahamas to organize crime and the Mary Carter Payne Company, and later became, he was Secretary of the State, he was Attorney General, and then, now on the Pahlavi Foundation with the Shah of Iran. He let Hoffa off the hook and with a slap of the wrist for possible arrest. But this book describes in 1960 how Richard Nixon had intervened with the Justice Department on Hoffa's behalf. It involved a Sun Valley indictment. Nixon was then vice president, And it tells how if Robert Kennedy, this is a quotation, had Robert Kennedy been the Democratic candidate that seemed likely in 1968, that he would have again gone after organized crime, so that the cozy relationship of the Teamsters and Jimmy Hoffa and Fitzsimmons of the Teamsters were very close to Richard Nixon and against Robert Kennedy. And it also explains how when John Mitchell was the Attorney General, then Richard Nixon brought in Murray Chotiner of organized crime, who was close to Carlos Marcello and the assassination team that had been active in the 60s against John Kennedy, and how Nixon got favors from Carlos Marcello, all of this money, and that Irv Davidson, this important man, was a close friend of Marcello. And the book says both Carlos Marcello and Trafficante survived Nixon's war against organized crime rather well. Trafficante came through the Nixon year with an unblemished record. Marcello only had a small indictment. He had 6 months in jail for assaulting an FBI agent while Nixon was president. When the House Select Committee on Assassinations was investigating John Kennedy's murder, they concluded at the very end that it possibly could involve Carlos Marcello and Santos Trafficante. But, of course, this book, The Hoffa War, goes back to the introduction by Davidson of Hoffa to John Connally and Lyndon Johnson and those Texas people that would be involved with Richard Nixon at the time that John Kennedy was killed. The stories that are being investigated now with Abscam and Brilab go right back to the plans in 1960 to kill John Kennedy and Robert Kennedy when John Kennedy won the nomination over Adlai Stevenson or Lyndon Johnson and then won the election from Richard Nixon. And at that point, the mobsters and the CIA and the FBI got together to set up the assassination teams to kill the Kennedy brothers. Spiro Agnew, the former vice president, has a book coming out called Go Quietly or Else, published by William Morrow, and there's some excerpts of the book and interviews, and he surfaced this week saying that he feared for his life at the time of Watergate and that he resigned as vice president because he was afraid that he would be murdered, and he blamed General Haig, who was in the White House at the time, and claimed that General Mike Dunn came back from a meeting with Haig and said that Agnew would be murdered. The actual story about Spiro Agnew and his involvement in Watergate and getting out of the role of vice presidency with just a slap on the wrist had more to do with Richard Nixon firing Spiro Agnew after Watergate because Nixon thought he would be murdered. And in 1972, in the Realist article, my first published article, Why Was Martha Mitchell Kidnapped?, I talked about the people that arrested at the Watergate, and at that time, the name of G. Gordon Liddy hadn't even come out. This article was written 3 weeks after the arrest, and it mentioned the suspect, the man from New York, who hadn't even been named yet. But I referred to the offices of Robert Bennett of Mullen & Company, which are really the Howard Hughes offices in Washington, D.C., the public relation firm in 1969 that was with the Central Intelligence Agency, and Douglas Caddy from the CIA was heading that office. He was co-founder of Young Americans for Freedom, and this group had brought in Germans to the Dallas-Fort Worth area, American Nazis that were stationed in Germany that were brought to Dallas at the time of Kennedy's assassination. And Douglas Caddy and the group from Robert Mullins were really supporting Spiro Agnew to be president of the United States. And I mentioned that in the article. I referred to Robert Mullen as the co-founder of Young Americans for Freedom, along with William Buckley, and that they wanted Agnew as president, and that they had set up a fund of $10 million for dirty tricks and espionage that involved the killing of Richard Nixon at the Republican convention and making Agnew president of the United States. This team were working to murder Richard Nixon, and I wrote in 1972 that Patrick Gray, the graduate of Annapolis, the acting director of the FBI at the time, had covered up murders of various people in Los Angeles, the Isla Vista riots in Santa Barbara, the murder of Ruben Salazar and Jerry Lee Amey, and that his job was to cover up the investigation of the George Wallace shooting and, of course, the murder of J. Edgar Hoover. Just a week before George Wallace was shot. I went quite at length in the article, Why Was Martha Mitchell Kidnapped?, into the role of Spiro Agnew and his links to the Greek military junta and the Nazis in power that were put in power in Greece by the CIA, and that they wanted Agnew as the president of the United States, and that all of them were pushing for Agnew to be president, and the plans did exist to kill Richard Nixon and make Agnew president. In fact, I wrote in the article, this was in 1972, that the money for these murders and assassinations, and of course this week, as I say, the men were talking about plans to kill them, Liddy thought he was going to be killed, he thought he would get orders from Charles Colson to kill E. Howard Hunt if he talked, they were to kill Jack Anderson. They talked about the attempts, not who they actually did kill. But I wrote in 1972 that the CIA funds went from Washington to Chile, and then to Mexico, and then to Miami to be set up for these assassination teams. Now, Chile, at that time, I didn't know about Operation Condor that Jack Anderson is writing about now. I didn't know about Colonial Dignidad or the nest of Nazis that had gone from Mexico, written up in the Torbett document from Oaxaca, Mexico. But this nest of Nazis had been down in South America for a long, long time, 30, 40 years, and they went there as soon as the war was over, just before it was over, World War II. But I went at length in the article on how there were plans to kill Richard Nixon. Keep in mind, I wrote that in August of 1972, and I asked, can persons associated with the extreme radical right wing of the Republican Party who think Nixon is a pinko because he went to Russia and China or didn't invade Cuba be financed through the CIA to create martial law and then kill Richard Nixon? And I mentioned the same CIA that offered the Greek colonels assistance for that coup d'etat said that Richard Nixon could only run for presidency if he took Spiro Agnew as vice president. Now, as soon as the tape was at the Watergate Hotel and Nixon was caught, he knew that his days were over as president of the United States, that his team of dirty tricksters that were operating to keep him in business were caught, but they were caught purposely by tape left on the door from James McCord, who worked with the CIA, the FBI, and the Pentagon, and the Spiro Agnew faction. So as soon as Watergate arrest took place, long before Richard Nixon was going to be impeached, he pulled the rug out from Spiro Agnew because Nixon then would be killed and Agnew would be president. Agnew is writing that he feared for his life, but everyone in Washington was fearing for their lives. James McCord was told by Mr. Caulfield that he was going to be killed. G. Gordon Liddy thought he was going to be killed, as I say. And death was the story of the day, and it's very much in the news right now. As a matter of fact, in Midnight newspaper, it came out July 12, 1976. That was 4 years after Watergate. I did an article, 33 witnesses met violent death that were Watergate-related. And in 1976, that seemed very outrageous to people who haven't studied the murder witnesses to the John Kennedy assassination. But I named these 30 witnesses plus the 41 extra that were on the plane of Dorothy Hunt, which would be 71 witnesses within 4 years, major witnesses to the Watergate story. But as Liddy talks about killing people and being able to kill people, you see that those deaths are possible and were possible, and that death was the thing that each one there was worried about that he would meet next because his involvement of what he knew. G. Gordon Liddy has a book coming out called Will, and some excerpts of it were in Time magazine this last week. And there are certain points of it that get mixed by the news media. They get mixed in the context and ignored totally. What makes the headlines is G. Gordon Liddy wanted to kill E. Howard Hunt. G. Gordon Liddy wanted to kill Jack Anderson. G. Gordon Liddy thought he would be killed. But briefly going through the Time magazine article, in case you didn't read it, or bringing out certain points, I want to just share with you some of the things that were in Time that I see in it that are being ignored by the mass media. He talked about the CIA being involved in Chappaquiddick. They're not supposed to work domestically. He tells how they provided cartoons of Ted Kennedy and Chappaquiddick for the news media. He doesn't say which cartoonists or which newspapers, but they provided cartoons. G. Gordon Liddy was born in Hoboken, New Jersey. Of course, New Jersey is an interesting state with the offices of I.G. Farben during the war and the tremendous organized crime killer team, headquarters for a lot of training for the FALN, the Alpha 66, the anti-Castro Cubans, the Moonies. There's a lot of political extremism going on in New Jersey, and G. Gordon Liddy was born over there in New Jersey. He became an FBI agent. In 1957, he passed the bar, and in 57, became an FBI agent. I like the year 57. That was the year that Howard Hughes was literally kidnapped by the CIA and kept prisoner, starting in 57. Of course, that's the year that Candy Jones was given her second personality, and the mind control was begun on her. And that was the year of the Appalachian meeting of organized crime to redistribute and redirect the directions of the mobsters to divide up the United States. Liddy went to the Treasury Department in 1969. Maybe his book will tell you, but the article in Time doesn't tell you that Gerald Ford from the Warren Commission got G. Gordon Liddy the job for the Treasury Department. And he was there just the years that they were doing assassinations and assassination attempts. He tells about getting LSD to give to Timothy Leary, but what he says is that the CIA supplies these drugs that make people look delirious and sick or silly to discredit them. We know that already, and we've heard the story, but Liddy is very matter-of-fact, and nobody from the CIA has ever been put on the carpet about it. He talks in his book about the Gemstone file, and of course the destruction at the committee to re-elect the president, the destruction of the files, had to do with their operations of counterintelligence, and the main operation, in case many of you didn't know, it was called Diamond, and that was the counter-demonstrations that were to take place at the San Diego Convention that was later moved to Miami, and it involved drugging people, kidnapping them, fixing them up with prostitutes, taking them over to Mexico, and using professional killers who had already killed 22 people. The gist of the article I wrote 3 weeks after the Watergate arrest had to do with Gemstone under the category of Diamond, and I didn't have the operation name, and it had to do with the riots and discrediting the radicals and killing Richard Nixon and using disguised hippies and counterintelligence agents for riots and demonstrations and violence at the conventions. And now he's coming out with what he has to say in his book exactly coincides with what I wrote 8 years ago in 1972. They had their Diamond operation with their 22 killers. Their Gemstone included Ruby to demonstrate and infiltrate demonstrations with spies, and coal, which is black and not a precious jewel, was to follow Shirley Chisholm and have a black woman break up the votes of the Democrats and cause a lot of problems and divide them against each other. Just as they're talking about Anderson might possibly use Barbara Jordan, again, a black woman, take votes away from any of the Democrats to make sure that Reagan wins. The same tricks are going on. That's why it's so important to study them. Emerald was to chase planes and follow up on the buses and the entourage of the various people that were running for office. And Quartz was the microwave interception of telephones. And then the crystal operation of Gemstone was the use of prostitutes and mirrors and king-size beds and very fine ladies that weren't ordinary street prostitutes to blackmail members of Congress and well-known politicians for future use. And he talks about Operation Turquoise, which had to do with the blueprints for the convention halls. He said they wanted to turn off the air conditioning in Miami, but they wanted to make the people uncomfortable and sabotage the room so they'd be hot. I wrote in 1972, 8 years ago, I didn't give it a name. I said that they got floor plans of the convention halls from the architect who built the building, and that they could use chemicals in the air conditioning plant, that if they murdered a candidate, just as Robert Kennedy was killed in the Ambassador Hotel, if you murdered a major candidate, you could have people lose their memory through vapors and chemicals in the air conditioning ducts. He describes Operation Turquoise in 1980. Even though I didn't have the name for it, I had access, after I wrote my first article, to the Gemstone File, or one called the Gemstone File by Bruce Roberts. But I wrote 8 years ago very much what G. Gordon Liddy is writing about now, and nobody has talked about, were the very carefully laid plans for violence and counterintelligence at the convention in Miami. That's why I say the FALN were arrested before the violence at Madison Square Garden this summer because they would be directly linked to the CIA, and after the arrest at the Watergate Hotel, the violence of the convention wasn't allowed to go through because it would be linked to the CIA, the FBI, and the Pentagon. We didn't have that kind of information in 1968, and that's why there were so many riots in Chicago at the time. G. Gordon Liddy talks about arranging death, and one way they do it, he said, and they considered this for Jack Anderson, and it isn't important whether or not Jack Anderson lived or died at this point. The techniques are what are important. One way is to give people LSD or chemicals in their drinks, and then they lose control of the car, and they have car crashes. How many deaths of those 27,000 deaths cataloged and facts on file were car crashes? That's why I'm anxious to get a hold of that book. He also talks about arranging street crimes. If somebody is mugged on the street of Washington, if you take a person who's talking about Watergate or Watergate evidence and you have an accident, Murray Chotiner of Organized Crime, who was the link of John Mitchell's Justice Department to Carlos Marcello and Carlos and Santos Trafficante, and these people had a car crash. Clay Shaw had a car crash. Primary witnesses had crashes. And then there's muggings in Washington, D.C., robberies of civil rights leaders and so forth that I've talked about. And Liddy talks about those. He talks about using Army scramblers to use for their counterintelligence operations, going out to the Air Force missile base to talk about the men that were arrested with the dirty tricks. James McCord was part of that 16-man emergency team. If we had martial law, who worked with the Army missile base, and Richard Nixon's team could cover up their operations by using these secret telephones. The other important point I want to make before this tape is over is that he was waiting in prison when G. Gordon Liddy was arrested. He was in prison, and he was arranging to kill E. Howard Hunt, who was also in jail. And he was waiting for word from Charles Colson, the born-again Christian from the White House, the attorney for Richard Nixon in charge of dirty tricks. But he said he could direct the murders from prison, that he would have himself put in solitary confinement so that at the time it wouldn't look like he did it. But from his prison cell, he could tell the guards and members of the syndicate who to poison. And the point is that many prisoners, many primary witnesses, many people are murdered in prison, and the guards supply the poison to the persons, and G. Gordon Liddy had the power to order the murders from his cell if he wanted to. The fact that it didn't happen to Hunt doesn't mean it didn't happen to other Watergate witnesses, or it isn't going on today, just as the death of those 33 people in New Mexico on the eve of the Abscam story had to do with informers, government informers, who were talking about members of organized crime or the links of judges and police departments to murders and organized crime. They were in a protective cell, and it's that cell that they went to the files and got the names and the keys and killed them, and we haven't heard a thing about the people who did the killing. He tells how he could poison, how he could order from his cell, that he had the means when he was in the cell to put food into diet trays. Hunt had a special diet tray. So G. Gordon Liddy, a member of the FBI, the CIA, the Treasury Department, could order poison from where he is in a jail to kill another government official who's also in jail. It's that kind of power that is important, the potential to order it and the way to cover up. He talks about the way you cover up, isolating yourself so they don't link you to it if Hunt had died. But the point is that he has the potential, and that the people who run the jails cooperate with murdering witnesses, that they will poison who you want, they will put you into isolation, and these are the things that I know are happening. But the Liddy book is important because he gives a clue to some of the techniques, and that's so important. Well, this is a dismal tape, a lot of deaths and so forth. I wish the news was nicer. I can't think of a way to make it better. I feel the only way to solve a problem is to admit it. The only way to cure a disease is to diagnose it. And the only purpose of recognizing these conditions is to hope for something better. And besides hoping, doing the actual physical work or involvement of exposing. And that's all we can do, or that's a start. In the meantime, you take care of yourself. This is Mae Brussel in Carmel, California, and we'll be back together next week with a little more grisly news, but at least an awareness of what is happening and maybe some ways to counteract it in the course of our lifetime. In the meantime, you take care, and I'll be back with you next week.